Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 26th day of December, 2018. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And yes, it's the so-called holiday week, so the temper of the news is a bit different than normal. But the political correctness certainly isn't. Let's start off with at least a representative story on that score. The White House had already easily met, said Zero Hedge's coverage of yet another scandal that the waste stream was trying to make a mountain out of a molehill concerning their Christmas controversy quota, by shuttering the government, pulling out of Syria, and browbeating the chairman of the unconstitutional Federal Reserve during the run-up to the holiday. But amidst all the outrage and virtue-signaling backlash to his latest string of policy decisions, President Trump apparently committed the unforgivable violation in the eyes of the leftists on Christmas Eve, telling a child that Santa Claus isn't real. And here I guess I have to pause and remind folks, that's because he might not be quite as amenable afterwards to the public school indoctrination of believing that the real Santa Claus is the biggest brother you can possibly imagine. And let's not forget, Big Brother is listening, so he knows who's really naughty and nice. This latest horrible transgression occurred during what's called a White House tradition, where President Trump and First Lady Melania joined NORAD in their traditional tracking of Santa Claus on Christmas Eve, whereupon the president took calls from children hoping to speak with Santa directly, and in response to a request from a 7-year-old boy named Coleman, who turns out, according to later coverage, to have actually been a girl, the president asked whether the child was still a believer in Santa Claus because, as he put it, at 7 it's marginal, right? There was immediate outrage on Twitter. Said one WAPO columnist, how dare the president audaciously joke with a young child about such a serious subject? Just Trump being Trump, said some of the apologists. Others, of course, continued to demand his immediate resignation or impeachment. And no doubt the new commie Congress will add this one to the list. Funny, isn't it, folks, how telling a child that being a believer in Santa Claus at 7 might be marginal, right? But telling the same kids that there really is no God, and besides, he can't be trusted anyway when it comes to making you into a little boy or a little girl, is evidently fine. And as petty and representative as all of that is, when your host first saw the story, I pretty well dismissed it and thought, okay, what else is new? But it was when I saw the follow-up, not nearly as widely reported, I thought, you know, maybe this is really a good way to start off the day after Christmas news review. This comes originally from BuzzFeed, but also via some other alternative sites. The parents of Coleman Lloyd, it says, the little 7-year-old girl from Lexington, South Carolina, whose phone call with President Trump on Christmas Eve went viral after he asked her if she still believes in Santa Claus and then said, at 7, it's marginal, right? Say they don't have any issue with how Trump, in fact, spoke to their daughter. His dad, Donald J. Lloyd, age 40, told BuzzFeed News he would have used similar language with his own daughter, and he thinks the remark is being taken out of proportion and unfairly politicized. Gee, do you think? Quote, I think it's crazy it became a big deal. It's Christmas time. I'd love to keep the politics out of Christmas, said Donald. It didn't bother me. I like to talk to my kids like adults. Coleman's mom, Erica, also age 40, agreed, saying that she found Trump to be extremely generous. Quote, I'm a teacher. I'm okay with the vocabulary, said Erica, who teaches third graders. He was very kind. I was very impressed with the phone call. Unquote. Kind of reminds me of Russia, 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 or maybe a Shakespeare play, Much Ado About Nothing. But that, in fact, is the real news here, isn't it? But it does kind of lead me into a few more stories about educational malpractice. Take, for example, Harvard. Once a renowned center of educational excellence, even a theological seminary if you go far enough back, now evidently the poster boy for politically correct leftist mediocrity. Or worse. Remember the brain-dead, vapid camera hog whose 15 minutes of fame had to do with being clueless and proud of it when it came to one of the more recent high-profile false flag mass murders in a gun-free killing zone? Camera, a.k.a. David Hogg, is heading to Harvard, despite having one of the most pitiful SAT scores in the entire university, 1270. The College Fix reports that the bottom 25% at that once elite institution have an average SAT score of a lot better than that, 1460. Evidently, it's no longer white privilege that gets you in with such pitifully low scores to a once so-called elite university, But you do have to admit that his socialist PC credit score is probably off the charts. So eat your heart out, you not quite so politically correct Asian American students with 1600 SATs. But as to where all of this is headed and what it means, look no further than one of the biggest airheaded dolts ever to be elected to Congress. Says the Daily Caller, progressive House socialists are lining up behind what could be the largest expansion of Big Brother's government in decades. The airheaded Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal. Yeah, it might cost tens of trillions of dollars and do untold global harm, but hey, what do you expect from an airhead Congress critter that doesn't even know what the three branches of government are? Much less how printing a few trillion more fake dollars could possibly cause a problem, or who thinks Jews fleeing the Holocaust is somehow equivalent to the migrant invasion. But her latest intellectual tour de force may even top not knowing even what the executive, legislative, and judicial branches once were. In spite of its vacuity, though, the New York nutcase's Green New Deal has the support of more than 40 Democrat communists. To wrap social justice warriorship and fighting non-existent man-made global warming all at the same time in one massive, literally world-destroying super boondoggle involving moving the United States to 100% green energy, federal job guarantees for all of the myriad workers at least forced directly out of their fossil fuel jobs, and guaranteed minimum income and universal health care for all the millions of others who won't have productive employment anymore. Democrats take control of the House next year, says the Daily Caller, and many want to see global warming become a central part of their agenda, and they'd better hurry before it's obvious that we're cooling. But the poster child for negative education in the public cesspools said it this way, quote, "This is going to be the New Deal, the Great Society, the moonshot, the civil rights movement of our generation," unquote, said Ocasio-Cortez at a panel event in early December, standing alongside Bernie Sanders. And true to form, says the Daily Caller, since the Green New Deal lacks any actual specifics, it's hard to gauge the total cost, but similar climate and welfare policies are estimated to cost well up into the trillions, including over $5 trillion over the next 20 years just for the renewable electric grid. One way to think of that might be to build Trump's wall, only 1,000 times higher, while Sanders' Medicare for All plan is already estimated to cost over $32 billion for just one decade. And if you look back to the Johnson regime and the so-called Great Society, which turned out to be anything but great, that one, according to the Heritage Foundation, has already cost America over $22 trillion, not counting a constitution. And when you put the New Deal and Great Society together, concludes the Daily Caller, U.S. taxpaying slaves have now been put on the hook for trillions in debt and unfunded liabilities, estimated to be somewhere between a minimum of just under 90 trillion fiat bucks and a quarter quadrillion dollars. No, the Ocasio-Cortezes of Congress don't have any clue what that actually means. And admittedly, those numbers do boggle most Americans' minds, but I guess the one way to put it succinctly is, when it comes to socialist insanity run amok, you ain't seen nothing yet. And yeah, no wonder they want to take your guns. And I guess while I'm on the subject of nutcases and political correctness run amok and the like, I will do this story briefly. Tennis legend Martina Navratilova spawned fury when she dared to say the following. I'll read the whole tweet, folks, because it's been removed from Twitter for obvious reasons. Asked by a Twitter follower how she felt about transgender women in sports, she replied, quote, "Clearly that can't be right. You can't just proclaim yourself a female and be able to compete against women. There must be some standards, and having a penis and competing as a woman would not fit that standard." Unquote. How dare she? And the nutcase left and the Twitter sphere exploded in fury. Calls to have her banned and worse flooded Twitter, forcing her to quickly delete the initial post. But maybe she's lucky. As a tennis legend, and most especially a female, Twitter hasn't banned her yet. But I guess she did learn her lesson. Having an attack of logic on Twitter is no longer permitted. Political correctness, though, isn't limited to twits, Hollywood hypocrites, and corrupt Congress critters. Here's one from the Commie News Network, where former NATO commander Wesley Clark told CNN on Monday morning that Turkish President Erdogan must have blackmailed President Trump into withdrawing U.S. forces from Syria. I kid you not, folks. The retired U.S. Army general and former NATO Supreme Allied commander posed the following explosive question during that live interview on Monday. And I'll quote it if I can get through it. You have to ask, he said, why was the decision made? People around the world are asking this, and our allies in the Middle East are asking, did Erdogan blackmail the president? Was there a payoff or something? What was it? Why would a guy make a decision like this? Unquote. Well, gee, folks, just maybe it's because he promised to, and he's honoring his commitments. I know that's a foreign concept to so many in the swamp. Oh, and maybe he doesn't want more dead boys coming home in boxes and actually feels like, what, detente with the Russians and a move back from the brink of World War III could somehow be a good deal? Yeah, it does make you wonder, why would a guy make a decision like that? Picking up on the theme, other pro-war sites were quick to point out that the airstrikes in Syria continue despite Trump's withdrawal announcement. At least as far as the coalition is concerned, their military strategy, say some of them, hasn't changed since Trump's announcement last week that the U.S. would attempt to withdraw from Syria. There's an unspoken message here, said Axios. The coalition doesn't consider the terrorist group to be defeated. And guess who they think the terrorist group really is, folks? Others, not quite so big on the Dr. Strangelove mentality, think there may be another message afoot here. This one comes via Zero Hedge and Robert Bridge at the Strategic Culture Foundation. The reason he suggests so many people continue to misread the actions of the U.S. president is because they tend to confuse him with the actions and behaviors of past U.S. administrations, where indiscriminate death and destruction was America's calling card around a shell-shocked planet. Although he has been perhaps erratic in his actions, and maybe there's a message there too, Trump has thus far been predictable on at least one score, keeping the powers that be, and by that I think he means the swamp critters, guessing. Last week, Donald Trump, it continues, acting unilaterally and within full power as commander-in-chief, derailed the deep state's plans for yet another disastrous regime change operation, announcing the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria. And yes, while once upon a time that announcement would have been greeted with cheers, since it, well, at least once, was agreed that war is a very unpleasant enterprise, not so in post-constitutional, post-biblical America with a K. The screeching sound you hear of incensed hawks on both sides of the political aisle, says the author, says I, folks, why are we not surprised that both wings of that evil bird of prey are flapping in unison? Well, it's the screeching sound of the deep state expressing its deep displeasure and even pain. Lindsey Graham, for example, is back to his old neocon self. The article at this point, though, gets around to addressing the headline. Is Trump the real deal? And did the president just put the deep state on notice with respect to the Syrian withdrawal? There are two schools of thought, he says, concerning Donald J. Trump. First says he's just another typical politician beholden to the puppet masters of the deep state establishment, dutifully carrying out orders from above, albeit with a bit more bluff and bluster than past frauds. All right, you've heard all of that. But the other school of thought, he continues, says that Trump is the real deal, one of those rare irresistible forces of political nature, who by sheer force of will, character, and dare I say it, even genius, ascends the misty mountaintops despite or even because of the powerful forces aligned against him. In other words, the Trump phenomenon is an open window of opportunity to salvage what's left of the American political system, and the elite, fully aware of what's at stake, are doing everything possible to destroy it and him by any means necessary. And there are two reasons, he suggests, for thinking that that second train of thought might be valid. First, if Trump really were just another political cutout in the two-party dichotomy, the waste stream wouldn't be so fiercely committed to destroying this man and everything he stands for. Well, no argument on that score, folks. But the other reason to believe that Trump might be the real deal is because if he were just another political stooge doing the bidding of special interests, then certainly we'd have already been at war by now. And on this score, I think he makes a great point. Remember Hitlery, and we saw he died, and we made off with 66 tons of Gaddafi's gold, too. And just look at the lengths they've gone to prevent the guy from even talking to Vladimir Putin. And let's not forget, says Bridge, how giddy the establishment got last year when Trump gave them their first taste of bloodshed with a limited missile strike on Syria. No doubt about it, once so-called peace-loving liberals have again betrayed their true colors, not to mention their masters, by rebuking Trump for having the audacity to bring our troops home from a war zone. Yeah, let's not forget, there are still irons in the fire, like in the Ukraine, where Kiev is deliberately provoking Moscow and poking the Russian bear, looking for their chain reaction of escalation. But here's the bottom line, and yeah, it's got to be really scary for the swamp critters. It certainly looks like Trump's newfound desire to unilaterally call the shots, as if he was really the president, is rattling more than a few chains. The deep state, he concludes, must now rightly be wondering what Trump could do next. Order the U.S. military to build that wall on the Mexican border? Initiate indictments against the Clinton Foundation over pay-to-play allegations or other criminality, up to and including treason? Maybe shut down the Federal Reserve, and once again pay attention to that part in the Constitution where it talks about coining gold and silver as money. Well, folks, don't hold your breath there, but we will come back to that towards the end of the show today, at least kinda. Everything, says the author, is now on the table as far as Trump's options go, and that's certainly got to be of no small concern to the powers that be in the District of Criminal Swamp. From there, we go on to some good news and bad news on the anti-Second Amendment front, starting with New Jersey, where the traitors masquerading as state-level government continue to gang-rape their oaths and pretend to turn honest citizens into the real criminals. As you know, says the Free Thought Project's Matt Agarest, residents of New Jersey were given a deadline to turn in their 10-round-plus magazines or become overnight felons, and the good news is, so far, hardly anyone is complying. After New Jersey's perhaps most evil governor since the Revolutionary War era violated his oath and claimed to sign a law proclaiming the citizenry to be the violators and demanding they turn in their now forbidden property or else, citizens dutifully sued the government, citing the obviously unconstitutional nature of the ban. But it turned out their judicial branch was just as corrupt as their executive and legislative ones. But Amoland.com now says they've spoken with multiple police departments throughout the state, including two within the state police, who chose to remain anonymous, who said they don't know of any magazines turned into their agency. And the same thing seems to go for most local PDs. So it's not only true that civil disobedience to unconstitutional laws that really aren't laws may be the only way left, well, short of using those tools, for law-abiding citizens to effectively and peacefully fight back against the feckless gun grabbers. The good news is, so far at least, it seems to have been effective. And no doubt thanks to the likes of NSA, the FBI, the BATF, and Big Brother's eyes and ears in big tech, you can count on it. The data they're now gathering will be incorporated into their next anti-constitutional move. Meanwhile, though, they've already tipped their hand with this piece. New York City's Ministry of Propaganda and the Toilet Paper of Record has come out and said they would like to have credit card companies monitor sales of guns and ammo. As RedState.com correctly notes, this is simply a cry for a return of the Obama-era fascist Operation Choke Point, where the Treasury tried to bully banks into dropping firearms vendors as customers, with the addition of ensuring harassment of private citizens who've committed no crime as a way of intimidating others. Says the gun-grabbing gray lady in a propaganda piece entitled How Banks Unwittingly Finance Mass Shootings, credit cards have become a crucial part of allowing peons the access to the guns and ammo that make such things possible. So elected officials need to force their financial system to act. Don't throw me in the briar patch, Brer Rabbit. And they ought to monitor the purchases of every credit card owner and act to prevent anything that appears to a computer, or coming soon, an AI, to look suspicious. Which, of course, means anything that people might use to defend ourselves from the likes of them. And all of this goes hand in hand with New York's heavy-handed harassment of corporations with any kind of business relationships with purveyors of firearms or supporters thereof, like the NRA. So having failed in their attempt to actually outlaw or steal weapons so far, the left is looking to harness the energy of the administrative state in making the manufacture, sale, ownership, and feeding of guns as fraught with difficulty as possible. And they'll use the almighty public-private partnership to do it. Not everyone, though, can be deprived of the once God-given right to keep and bear arms. On next we go to a quick reminder of what it's like to really be above the law. And we're not just talking the whoremeisters like Comey and Mueller, or even the Peter Strzoks of the world. Remember the break-dancing FBI agent that shot a fellow in a bar in Denver and then quickly slipped out? Originally, it looked like he might have gotten away with it, but footage at the June 2nd shooting at Mile High Spirits and Distillery showed Bishop breakdancing in the middle of a circle of people before doing a backflip, whereupon his gun fell to the ground. He negligently shot a bystander as he picked it up, then quickly shoved the gun back into a waistband holster and disappeared into the crowd with his hands up. But the video went viral, and Chase Bishop, age 30, has now struck a deal with prosecutors, sick, and been sentenced to 2 whole years of probation. He also has to pay over $1,600 in fines and court costs. But unlike the rest of you peons who might have spent up to 16 years in the hooscow for less, i.e. second degree assault, Bishop is certainly doing better than the man he shot, Tom Reddington, age 24, who spoke emotionally in court about how he lost his job in an Amazon warehouse after the shooting, about his chronic pain, and his concern that he may never be able to run again. But he doesn't hold a personal grudge against the guy who should have known better. Quote, "I've done stupid things at bars to impress girls, too," he said. And you gotta love this line from the guy's attorney. Quote, "My sense is the DA cut this guy some slack because he was an FBI agent." Unlike, you might be thinking, how the agency treats elected presidents. Or come to think of it, even peons who still think they have a right to keep and bear arms. Well, as we wrap it up today, I guess it's important to remember that markets are again opened in a shortened week after the largest Christmas Eve crash on record. After the markets closed for the Christmas Eve crash in New York, the Japanese Nikkei crashed another 1,000 points, tumbling into a bear market, and likewise there was carnage elsewhere in the world. Stores after the market closed said things like, "A horrified Wall Street reacts to the Mnuchin massacre." But in communist China, they know how to do manipulation right. Beijing's plunge protection team, says a later headline, reversed the stock market rout there. Stepping in to show the U.S. Working Group on Financial Markets how real manipulation is done, leading to my favorite after-the-carnage quote of the whole mess, Michael O'Rourke, Jones Trading's chief market strategist, said the following, "Nothing says don't panic like saying, I'm calling the plunge protection team tomorrow. I honestly think," he continued, "that's the type of event that's going to startle markets and create more panic and fear when it's meant to create confidence," unquote. Or maybe, folks, it really wasn't so much after all. Nevertheless, over the weekend, the president stepped in and told folks they needed to buy the dips. Maybe you heard that from the talking heads on CNBC. Perhaps more importantly, though, he may or may not, we don't know for sure, have called a few high-profile folks into the Oval Office, on the carpet even. Did Mnuchin et al. And the rest of the plunge protection team get the word, finally, you really better be stopping this plunge or else? Well, amazingly, the plunge protection team seems to be back into the conspiracy theory category this morning, even though the Dow Jones Industrial Average has exploded higher. Up, coincidentally, pretty much over 600 points, and amazingly, across all the major indices, reversing the pre-Christmas carnage. Does that mean all is right with the world again, and the almighty fiat dollar isn't going to collapse, along with the markets? At least not today. Maybe here's an explanation. Holiday sales, after several years of disappointment, are the strongest in years, as consumers are again binging on debt. Well, that certainly sounds optimistic and sustainable, doesn't it? Oops, there is this other headline that says a collapse in U.S. home sales confirms what's been called peak unaffordability. Put it all together, suggests Zero Hedge, analysts who've interpreted all of these strong holiday sales figures as one last binge before the end of the credit cycle, might soon be vindicated. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.